Hello and welcome to episode 59 of The Offline Gamer. I'm Matt.
And I'm Ray.
And it's almost Christmas.
Woohoo! It is sub 2 weeks now.
It is.
It is indeed.
I'm looking forward to my extra 2 days off we get over Christmas as well.
Oh yes, me too.
Our employers have given us 2 extra days off for all of our hard work during the COVID crisis.
And because, well, so many of us have not actually managed to use up all of our holidays. So
that's true.
It's also made it an extra couple of days that will inevitably get carried over to next year.
Yeah.
For those of us who do such things at the end of the calendar year.
So how's the Christmas shopping going?
I believe I am done. I think I've got one thing left to arrive that I need to wrap and then post, but that is for Reddit Secret Santa. So I've done like everybody else's, as in people that I actually know, gifts and everything's wrapped and posted or delivered or awaiting swapping pickup type stuff. Yeah. So
yes, we'll have to do ours soon.
Yep.
I've got yours and Chris's ready to go. I've got other things for people who listen to this podcast, so I'm not going to say what they are. I might reveal all in the next episode. But yes, I've got just a couple of family members to go.
Super duper.
So what have we been playing since the last time we spoke? Well, no, not since the last time we spoke, because we speak regularly.
Yeah.
Since last time the people listening to this have heard us speak about what we've been playing.
Yes.
So I guess we talk about mostly computer games again, because that's pretty much all we can do in this day and age. There's not really much opportunity for people to get together who don't live together at the moment and play board games. So first thing I want to talk about is a classic game. Well, it depends how you define classic. If you were to ask my nephew, is this game a classic game? He'd say yes, because, you know, he's like 16 years old, and anything older than like a PlayStation 3 is classic to him.
Oh, dear.
I know. Yeah, like he calls an Xbox 360 retro. I'm like, no. That's not retro.
No.
And NES, that's retro.
Yeah.
But after completing Doom Eternal, I had a bit more of an itch for some more Doom. So I actually went back and started playing Doom 3. And I don't think I've played it since I played it originally back when it first came out in like 2004.
Yeah.
I think it was. So I own a physical copy because I bought it from where I worked at the time. But I'm actually playing not the original EXEs. There's a source port version of it called DHEWM3, which like gives it support for native widescreen and enhances some of the effects and makes it work better on modern systems.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been playing that. The graphics don't look too bad. You know, a 15-year-old game. You can look at it and see why it was considered revolutionary at the time, because it had lots of features that modern games now have.
Yeah.
There's two things that I think if the game was being re-released, well, in fact, it was re-released, wasn't it? Because it was released as the BFG edition. So the one thing that I've noticed when playing the game is just how dark it is.
Mm.
And the whole thing about you've got a flashlight, but you can't use the flashlight and a gun at the same time. So you've got your flashlight out, you're walking around, but then if you see a zombie or demon or whatever they are, then you have to put your flashlight away and get your gun out and start shooting blindly into the dark, which a lot of people moaned about. And there were mods for the original game that, I think there's one called the duct tape mod, which was basically just it attached the torch to your gun with tape. But then when they re-released Doom 3 is the BFG edition, they actually put that in the game. So some people say that the BFG edition lost some of the character of Doom because you had the light on all the time, so it ruined some of the suspense. And the other thing is the pacing of the game is just so slow.
Yeah, it was quite slow.
There's so much just wandering around for 5 minutes. Then you'll see a couple of enemies, shoot them, and then you'll have to wander around for another 5 minutes to do the next thing. And it just takes time. And I wouldn't say I'm not enjoying it, but obviously it shows that I'm not enjoying it as much as I did when I first played it, purely because I think the industry has moved on so much in the last 15 years.
Yeah, I think there were a few things back then, like Fear and Dead Space, where there was a lot of tense silence, wandering around going, oh, is it going to be around this corner? Is it going to come out of that vent? Is it going to jump out at me from here? And I think Doom 3 had a lot of that as well. The problem that I had with Doom 3 is that I found a bug, which meant that I was stuck in a hallway and I couldn't get out of the hallway. I couldn't reload the last save because it was in that hallway. So I never finished the game because I got so pissed off with it. But yeah, I remember that coming out. I was 16 when that came out, so.
I would have been 23, 24, something like that.
Yeah.
I think the last game I can think of that had that real sort of suspense, you know, where's the next enemy attack going to come from, would have been Alien Isolation.
Yeah.
Because obviously that's the whole point of the game. You're sneaking around. I think Doom 3 is certainly a lot more of a horror game than Doom 1 and 2 were. And obviously the new Doom games are just action constantly. So it's a completely different direction for the franchise. So, but it's worth a replay. I think you should give it a go.
I think I'd probably have to find it first.
Yeah. Well, you can buy it on, I think you can buy it on GOG for like a few quid now. So.
Oh, okay.
And I've been playing it for a good few hours and I don't think I'm even halfway through the game yet. So it's got enough content there to keep you going, you know.
I've been tempted to go back and try and play Dead Space 3. Because I remember when it came out, I got partway through and then I got distracted by something else and I never went back to finish it. But
I don't think I ever played any of the Dead Space games.
I played 1 and 2 and part of 3. 2 I absolutely loved. 1, I kind of cheated by just watching the end boss on YouTube because it was like it frayed my nerves by that point. But it's a similar thing with Fear. I never finished Fear 3 because I got stuck on a point where it was just impossible. Like, it was too difficult. And I just got stuck in this room with a bunch of, like, giant assholes. And they just kept killing me over and over again. And I got so pissed off with it. I was like, no, bye. See ya. But those were both games where there was, like, another character that, if you played it single player, just automatically did whatever it did. That it, you could play it co-op if you wanted to. But, I kind of have had the thought in my head of, oh, maybe I want to play one of those, like, suspensey games. But then I do have other suspensey horror-y games that have come out since those franchises ended.
Mm.
That are still sitting in my Steam library going, why won't you install me?
I mean, I've said before, I try to avoid them where I can. Alien was one of the rare exceptions where I played it just because of the franchise. But if it wasn't an Alien game, I don't think I'd have gone near it because it was just too, you know, too much brown trousers time, to put it mildly.
I think at least with Dead Space and Fear, once you played the first game, you kind of knew what their tactics were.
I didn't find the Fear games that bad, actually. I played all three of them. I probably talked about it on the podcast because I'm sure it was after we started recording. I played them all. I just went through all of them and I didn't find them that scary.
Yeah, see, originally Chris played Fear and I watched him over his shoulder. And then I played Fear 2 and 3. Well, some of 3 until I got stuck. And I remember buying my brother the special edition of the first game when it came out, and I think he avoided playing it for like a year because he was worried about it being too scary. And he's 3 or 4 years younger than me.
Yeah.
So when did Fear 1 come out? Quite a while ago.
Oh,
it was about 2003, 2004, wasn't
Doom,
it?
Wasn't it? Yeah, let's have a look.
So he would have been about, I don't know, 12. And it's got a big 18 sticker on it. I'm like, it's fine. because both of us were like, oh, I really want to play that. And I think I got it him for Christmas or his birthday or something. And then he didn't play it for ages. And I didn't want to say, can I play it? Because, you know, I'd bought it for him. It was his gift. So in my mind, he, you know, should have played it first before I was allowed.
Yeah. So, 2005 it came out. Okay. October 2005.
So how old was I? I don't know. 16. So yeah, Andy would have been 12. Yeah, Andy would have been, oh no, hang on, 2005. He would have been 13, I think. 13 or 14, I don't know. I can't remember any of these things.
He'll be correcting you, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, I would have been 17 and he would have been 15 at that point. No, 14 at that point. Because my birthday is December and his is May. So there's the start of the year where it's a 4 year in numbers, and then the rest of the year it's 3 years in numbers. And when we were little, he used to get really angry because he got confused and thought I had two birthdays in the same year. Because my birthday is 29th of December, so it would be my birthday, and then like 3 days later I'd say, I'm 15 this year. And he'd be like, that's not fair. You've already had a birthday this year. I'm like, no, I haven't, because we've changed last years. Going slightly off topic from Doom 3.
It is. Let's stop talking about scary games. Let's talk about fun slashing things and killing things games like Hades.
Yeah.
You've played a bit of Hades as well, haven't you?
Yes, I have. I didn't put it on my list because I couldn't remember whether I talked about it in the last episode.
I think you
may
have done. I think that might have been what made me actually play it properly.
Yeah.
I don't know if I don't know how much longevity I've got. I'm finding it very repetitive. I mean, I know it's a repetitive game. That's the whole point of it. You keep playing through the dungeons and leveling up until you get to the end of the game. But I'm at that point now where I've played the first part of the game so many times. I'm just like, can't I just skip to the second bit, please?
Yeah. I got a bit like that, and I got a bit sick of having to try and beat Meg.
Yeah, she's really difficult. So for those who don't know, she's the boss of the first sort of area in the game, I guess you could say.
Is it Tartarus?
Tartarus, yeah.
Yeah. I've only managed to get to the second area boss, which is the Bone Hydra, and then I just end up getting killed.
Actually, I managed to get to the Bone Hydra and kill it, and then immediately died after. Yeah. In the third area, but I actually found that boss easier than Meg. Weirdly, I don't know why. Maybe it was just to do with the. So as you're going through the levels in the dungeon, you get power ups as you go. So it could have been just the specific combination of power ups I'd got that made that boss easier.
Well, are you playing keyboard or on controller?
Keyboard and mouse.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't play that with a controller. No way. I wouldn't, no.
Yeah, some people say you can't play it with keyboard and mouse, but...
Well, those people are wrong.
Each to their own.
Yeah. Among Us I've been playing because I used my Twitch Prime sub to sub to Rick Carranza of shows at the UK Games Expo on Twitch, and he did a Among Us subs game, which was great because people kept ejecting me because I didn't know what I was doing. Hmm. And they were like, yeah, QB's the imposter. He must have done it because his answers aren't satisfactory. And then they eject me out the airlock, and I'm like, no, just literally had no idea where I was going. Your loss. Ha 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 ha. Yes. And last of all, a game we've both been playing. It's just come out. It is Cyberpunk 2077.
Yes.
Now, this is very, very good. But buggy. I found very buggy. Just go to the Cyberpunk subreddit and look at all the little videos people have posted about things like cars getting flown up in the air. And
yeah.
I was wandering around earlier and Keanu Reeves was talking to me and his character was stuck in a wall.
Yeah. I think I've seen Jackie walk through elevator doors a couple of times.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm not particularly far in the story. And because I'm just split between too many games, and I got really annoyed with the character the first two times, so I started it three times now.
I mean, I do like the character customization.
Yeah, I think I just got irritated because the first time I tried the masculine voice and I just can't stand it. It's
See,
like
I don't have much of a problem with it.
But I just think it's too growly and angry. And it's like thing with Assassin's Creed Odyssey. When you play the dude, his voice is just so growly and angry and like, it's just impossible to listen to for any length of time. So then I changed it and did a character with the female voice. Well, sorry, the feminine voice. Yeah. But I had a dude's body. And then I was just getting annoyed because they've assigned pronouns based on the voice. So everybody was calling my guy she just because I didn't like the masculine voice because it was too growly. So then I've redone it and just done feminine body, feminine voice. So at least I don't have to deal with any weird pronoun issues with having a dude's voice.
I wouldn't be surprised if there's a toggle in a future patch for you to choose your pronoun.
Oh, yeah, because it's just weird. Like, oh, you've got a high-pitched voice. Oh, you must be a she.
Yeah, even though you're, really butch and quite clearly have...
Even though it literally had the dude's body.
Yeah.
Like, nope, we're going to call you she the whole time. Okie dokie. But yeah, so the first two times I started off as a nomad, and then the third time I've started off as a street kid just so I could see something different.
That's why you haven't done the corporate one.
No.
I start.
No, I don't like corporate. It sounds like you're a bit of a douchebag.
I think the whole point is that you've left, though, haven't you? Because you've realised it's not a great thing. So.
Yeah. But...
So you haven't got to the heist mission yet, then?
No, I don't think so. I'm on, like, the...
Okay. That's the...
Yeah, I'm on Act 1. I've met Dexter Shawn, and he's told me I've got two different things to go and do. On my last go-through, I went and I talked to Evelyn, and I learned how to do stupid brain dance thing while the cat was attacking me. But this time I've just saved it, and I might go do the Maelstrom thing first because I haven't seen that yet. But I went and picked up.
So the heist is the end of Act One.
Yeah. So the first, the second time around when I actually got to Night City, I didn't go and pick up the quick hack that Teague Bug's friend Yoko has for you. But this time I have gone and picked it up. So now I've got a ping hack as well as what you get to start with. And I've got some other random side missions that I have no idea when you're supposed to do them because there's just so much stuff that gets thrown at you in the beginning of this game.
Just whenever. Yeah. I'm just trying to do the side missions as and when I can. It's just really... There's so much, and one of the main complaints I have about the UI is it's not great. It's definitely a console centric UI.
Yeah, because having to have like sometimes it's you have a thing that pops up inside and it's like, oh, press Z to do this, but if you miss it, then you have to go into like I don't know how to get it up without going into inventory, so I just press I. But there must be a quick thing to go into your quests, but I don't know what it is. Because you can't hit tab.
J for quests. Okay.
There we go. Because you can't hit tab because tab does the scanny thing to see what you can hack and who's a bad guy and all this. But then I know there's a side quest where I've got to go pick up some money from the very first thing that you do where you rescue the girl from the ice bath.
Yeah.
But I have no idea when I can actually go and get that money because apparently I have to wait till the area is off lockdown. I'm like, but I want money. Give me the money.
The lockdown will lift at the end of Act 1, so it won't be too long.
Fair enough.
But as you, when you drive into a new area for the first time, the fixer for that area will contact you and say, come see me, I've got more quests for you. And I'm like, no, I've got too many already.
Yeah. Yeah, I found that already. I'm like, oh, we've got to go, we're working for this lady, and now we're working for this guy, Dex, and now some girl called Regina is calling me and telling me to to knock out cyber psychos and go and chat up this cop. And I'm like, what? And then the map's like, oh, there's a thing here, there's a thing here, there's a thing here, there's a thing here.
Yeah, yeah. What may you find if you go here?
Yeah, I was literally walking to the main quest, and I happened to walk past a mugging, and then all the people just were like, oh, you must be here to stop us, and started attacking me. And I was like, dude, I was literally just walking past. I had no idea what was going on.
You'll get good street cred for doing that, though, so that's good.
Yeah. I had to kill them all, but I have since restarted the game again, so...
Oh, okay.
That was in attempt two. That was on my way to meet Evelyn, who anybody who starts the game and plays not very much will meet. But yeah, I am enjoying it, but I've also been having lots of weird cyberpunky dreams.
Have you?
Okay. For the last few days. Just about weird cyborgs and stuff.
Well, what else have you been playing and hopefully not dreaming about?
Well, I've still been playing Assassin's Creed Odyssey, which I'm pretty sure I mentioned last time.
Yeah, I still need to get that.
Yeah. Which I hadn't played since May. And then when I picked it up again, I was like, I haven't played this since May. That's ridiculous. Thus, more evidence that time is now irrelevant.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't. Where am I?
In your bedroom? No, you're not in your bedroom.
No, I'm not. I'm in the spare bedroom. Mm. But the point is, where am I in Assassin's Creed Odyssey?
Don't know.
I don't know, midway-ish maybe? And it's fun.
Oh no, Odyssey's the one I've got, isn't it? The new one's not Odyssey, the new one's Valhalla. I'm getting confused.
Yeah, the new one's Valhalla. Odyssey is the last year's one, Odyssey, ancient Greece one.
Yeah.
So I'm about, I think, halfway through. I've upgraded my spear a couple of times. I've met my brother, whose voice is irritating, and he's a dick. And I'm trying to find my mum at the moment by going around doing pointless side missions for elderly priests.
Awesome.
But I haven't been able to play it very much in the last couple of weeks because my RSI threw a banner in the works, and my wrist and my elbow and my shoulder were giving me jip.
Mean a spanner?
Yeah. I said spanner.
Oh, you sounded like banner to me.
No, I was
as
sort
if
of...
the hole could come round.
Yeah, same thing. So I've also been playing a lot of Slay the Spire because that just needs a mouse. You don't need to do any fancy jumping around and magic.
You could probably
reactions.
Play that with a controller actually as well, can't you?
Yeah, if I you can do. I think you can get it on like some of the consoles as well.
Yeah, yeah. It's on Xbox and PS4, I think.
Yeah. And I finally unlocked everything for all four characters.
Oh, good.
Finally. And I'm still, like, I've subscribed to the Slay the Spire Reddit, and it's like, oh, I finally reached level 20 Ascension. And then you see they've got, like, 800 hours. I'm like, fuck. That's a lot of gameplay.
It sure is.
But at the moment, I'm just, now that I've unlocked everything, I'm just doing the daily quest things just to get a bit of variety in there. And that's pretty much what I've been playing, but I have also bought some things.
Ooh.
So I bought myself a copy of Jedi Fallen Order in a sale and Middle-earth Shadow of War because it was like £3. And I have bought a... No, you're not allowed to tell anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Or specifically, you're not allowed to tell Chris, which is fine because he doesn't bother listening to the podcast. Got a Switch with Animal Crossing and Pokemon Shield for us for Christmas, and I've wrapped it up and I've said it's from Santa on the label.
Okay.
And I wrote it with my left hand, so now Santa looks like a three-year-old trying to write. And then finally, I didn't buy this, but I received this in my Reddit Gifts Secret Santa exchange. I got a copy of Scrabble, because I realized that I quite like playing like Scrabble with friends and all that stuff. I like playing word games, but I don't actually own a copy of Scrabble. So I figured, there you go. That's an easy thing to pop on a wish list. So I'm sure there will be some tense battles of words over the Christmas holidays.
Yeah, I'm sure Chris will get very competitive over Scrabble. Something tells me that's just asking for trouble. Yeah, okay.
He does. We played it once in our entire relationship and never again.
Because well, let's see how long this lasts then. Oh, really? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, we played it once. Admittedly, he says it doesn't count because it was with chocolate Scrabble. But I still
won. What difference does that make?
I don't know. Because it's not the real Scrabble.
Oh, right.
I'm like, yes, but I still won. And that was in like, I don't know, 2006, 2007. So right at the very beginning of the relationship. And yeah, never again. And he's like, oh, it's just because we don't have a copy. I'm like, okay, now we've got a copy. You've got to not be butthurt if I win. But hopefully he's a lot less proud about that sort of stuff nowadays.
Oh, we shall see.
I suspect he probably is.
Okay, so that transitions us nicely to games of the physical realm. So what have I played in that space? So first of all, over video chat, Karen and I have been playing Hack Forward, which is one of the escape sort of room game type things that are backed on Kickstarter. Yeah. Actually, this one's quite good. It's an interesting mix of physical and online stuff as well. So you get things in a box and in envelopes that you have to open at certain points in the narrative that contain clues. But there's also things like you have to find the social media accounts of some of these people on Instagram or Twitter and then look at the pictures and try and figure things out and get people's passwords and stuff like that. So it's actually really, really cool. It's a nice blending of the physical and virtual realm. And you can play the first chapter of the game as a demo because that's entirely online. You don't need any of the physical components for that. So that's hackforward.com, I think. And if you just go on their website and look at the demo on there, you can just play the first chapter and get an idea of how the game plays. But online, it keeps track of where you are. So when you're doing a chapter, you start it on the website and then the characters in the game will say, okay, now open this packet that you've got in the box and it's got all these things in there. And there's even situations where you have to email a specific address. And I guess they've got some kind of system that looks for specific words in the email you've sent them. And if those words are in there, then it will reply to you with certain things. So that's pretty cool as well. So we're really enjoying that. I think we're about a third of the way through the game. So far, there's nine chapters, and I think we've done the first three. So yeah, I'd definitely recommend that. I don't think it was massively expensive either. I think it was like 30 or 35 quid, which for like a nine game, it's effectively supposed to be like 9 hours of gameplay. I don't think that's too bad at all. So, and I think you can reseal the components and give the game to someone else to play as well. So yes, I can let you and Chris have that after I finished, and you can give it a try because I think you'll like it.
Mm-hmm.
Or the you know, I think Chris especially will like all the, you know, this is why you shouldn't share pictures of things on social media because people can get your passwords and stuff like that, because there's a lot of that kind of thing in there. So.
Social engineering.
Indeed. The usual board game apps, Star Realms, Carcassonne, things like that. I've been playing a lot of those. And then lastly, our D&D campaign at work. So we've started a new campaign. So Jacob is running this. And we spent all the time coming up with our characters and our backstories. We did, I think, 3 or 4 episodes, or, well, whatever you want to call them, sessions, I guess, it was like set in the Icewind Dale universe. So we were playing in that sort of space. And then we found this strange unicorn. And then when we defeated all the enemies that were attacking the unicorn, the world started fracturing. And then all of our characters woke up in some kind of strange room where we were all wearing like virtual reality gear and stuff like that. And we were in some sort of machine. And it turns out we're in Cyberpunk.
There you go.
We're in Night City. So he's pivoted the game completely. And so we're not playing D&D anymore. We're playing Cyberpunk Red. So he had to translate all of the characters that we'd created in D&D over to the new system and try and work out what skills and things that our characters would have had based on the characters we were playing in D&D. And so, yeah, none of us were expecting that.
Yeah.
Bit of a plot twist.
Lovely.
It's a interesting system. I think in some ways it's a lot simpler than D&D because although there's still the same amount of dice rolling, the mechanics of how you like attack and stuff like that is a lot easier. You've got like a base skill and then you roll a d10 and then you add that onto your base skill and that tells you how well you've done. And yeah, it's good. We've done two sessions of that so far and we are progressing in the game. I'm really enjoying it. Can't say much more about that other than it's a good system.
Super duper. So you're playing two different types of Cyberpunk.
Yes, I am. But I'm actually, funnily enough, my character in the game is in 2077 is I'm doing the same sort of. I'm going very tech heavy. So my character in D&D was an artificer, which he's transferred over as like a tech person, but not a netrunner. But that's what I'm doing in 2077. I'm bumping a lot of my skill points as I level up into like intellect and tech and a little bit of cool. So I'm more of a sort of sneaky around, turning off security cameras and distracting people by making things appear on TVs and stuff like that, then I am a straight out going there, all guns blazing type of person.
Yeah.
But of course there are situations where the game forces you to get out your gun. There's no way around it. But yeah, that's not my primary method of getting around at the moment. So.
Yeah, I don't think I've played enough to have a style yet.
I think I'm level 8 or something. So I think once you start getting past level 5, you can... I think up to that point, it's pretty much samey.
Yeah, because I'm looking at some of the things going, well, I mean, that could be, I could see how this like perk might be useful, but I don't know whether it actually will be or not. Mm-hmm. And stuff like, oh, you make X percent less noise when you're sneaking, or there's X percent increase if you shoot someone from stealth. And I'm like, yeah, but I don't know how much stealthy stuff there is, how patient I'm going to be, whether I just want to be like go in there and smack people with a sword.
I think in most situations you can choose which way you want to go. Like there was a mission where I had to break into like a secure building where there was a van being held, and I had a couple of options. I could have just opened the front gate and just shot the guard who was there and then started going and shooting everyone. But there was like a broken fence panel around the side. So I sort of jumped over that and then creeped around and hacked the security cameras to turn them off and stuff like that. So I think generally there's a good amount of leeway in what you can do. It's just, I think there's a few like story beats where you have to do things in a certain way. One of which you'll come to at the end of Act One, where I don't think you've got any choice but to do a bit of gunfire. But, in general, I think on the normal missions, you've got a great deal of leeway.
Yeah. I suspect it's going to kind of be like, Deus Ex Machina, Deus Ex, sorry.
Yeah.
Where you could be really super, super stealth, or you could just go in there and smack people.
Yeah.
In my third character, I've decided she's just going to be like a badass. So why the heck not? So I haven't quite decided whether I'm going to stick with this badass thing, plan, or whether I'm going to get annoyed and distracted and just be stealth. I don't know.
Well, that's the beauty of the game. You can play it and see how it goes.
Yeah.
So that's what we've been playing and buying since the last episode. So now let's wander over to our usual little comfy corner of the podcast. That would be Kickstarter Corner. So let's look at the political satire games that we've had lately, Ray. Some good ones here this month.
Are they themed around a certain event?
They might be. Well, they're certainly themed around a specific person. Let's start with I Will Not Concede, the card game.
Yeah, that sounds awfully familiar.
Yes, yes. It's a card game for people with a sense of humour.
Ooh.
They've got a target of $5,000 and they've currently raised $461.
Gosh.
Use luck, strategy and unfair advantages to remain president as long as possible. Based on the traditional game of president. This is a family-friendly game for 3 to 6 players. I don't know what president is, so can't really comment much more about that. But, yeah, I think we all know who this is based on.
Yeah, I can't think that anything that involves that particular individual would ever be family-friendly, but...
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Unless you want to teach your children about really fucking depressing stuff.
Yeah.
You're going to have to explain a lot about, yeah, just no, I'm vetoing it.
Okay, let's move on then to the best words game, all in capital letters, an action-packed, fast-paced card game where you can battle your friends using the best and the worst quotes from the Donald. And it's got character cards like Big Baby, Obama, Double Obama, I see. The Russian Knight and the Little Rocket Man. So the Russian Knight is obviously Putin. Yeah. And the Little Rocket Man is King Jong Un.
Yeah.
Kim Jong Un. Yeah. I can say his name. Well, for some reason, he's purple. I don't know why.
I have no idea.
Yeah, so this campaign's already finished. It's actually British, which concerns me. They wanted a goal of £15,000 and they got just shy of £2,000 from 38 backers. So someone must have backed quite a lot if they managed to get 38 people to back nearly £2,000.
Yeah. Maybe they should go over to the other one, Indiegogo, where you just get whatever money there is.
Yeah. One backer backed at £580.
But why?
I don't know. It's probably a friend of the campaign or something.
Yeah, but
we'll give the money back afterwards.
Even if I had a friend, I'm still not going to give him £600 to make a game about Donald Trump. I don't think I'd give anyone £600 to make any game, no matter what, even if it was like my bestest friend in the whole wide world. Because I ain't got £600 to be splashing around.
That's true. Okay, let's talk about the COVID games then. First up, we have The Big Lockdown, a card game for people who like hoarding and hygiene.
Lovely.
This actually funded, created by Porthos Games from Essex. There's a nice picture of them saying thank you, sitting on a throne of toilet rolls. A cartoon throne of toilet rolls.
Oh, okay. Because otherwise that's a terrible waste of toilet rolls.
Yeah. Inspired by global events and a distinct lack of things to do, The Big Lockdown is an easy-to-learn card game that combines strategy, luck, and a love of hand sanitizer. So, how much did they actually raise? Can I see that? It's difficult on Kickstarter to get the... here we go. Yes, they were asking for $5,500, and they got $5,584. That's very close.
Yeah.
Two backers backed at £100.
That's a bit mad.
Yeah. So the next completed campaign, which again also funded, is Can You Survive 2020? Capitalism, Chaos and Collective Insanity for 2 to 6 players. You and your hapless companions are dropped into the world of 2020 as it careens through a series of near-miss apocalyptic events. The game is trying to kill you. To survive, you'll need plenty of toilet paper, dumb luck, homeopathy pills, and the power of friendship.
Yep.
I mean, so their funding got... Oh, sorry.
I was just going to say, in 19 days, we're all going to find out if we've survived 2020.
That's true. That's true.
So what?
They had a goal of $2,500, and they raised $3,696 from 66 backers. So what's their top level? Well, their top level was only $45, and they had 25 people back at that. I wonder where they managed to get so much. Oh, no, $95 was a limited one that four people backed at. Okay. And the last completed one is It's Contagious, a light-hearted and infectiously fun card game. This one had a goal of $10,000, and they got $10,155. There's a lot of games that have got very, very, very close to not funding.
Yeah.
What was their top? Okay, one person backed at their top pledge level of Go Airborne, private jet flight, for $2,495.
Really?
Enjoy a private tour by jet over the San Diego Bay, flown by expert airline transport pilot, COVID-19 survivor, and game inspiration Rich Pickett. Reward includes up to 3 passengers for a 1-hour flight. You'll be equipped with custom It's Contagious face masks to wear in flight and take home afterwards, plus a lot of hand sanitizer for your peace of mind. Also includes everything needed to play It's Contagious. What a strange reward. Well, I guess if the person who inspired the game was the pilot, then I guess that makes sense, I suppose.
Maybe.
Okay, so that's the completed ones. So which ones are still ongoing as of recording? So first up we have Max Panic, an infectious card game for 2 to 4 players. They've got a goal of $500 and they've currently made $355. Players survive by infecting other players or finding the cure first. Well, that's nice, isn't it? The goal of the game is to infect the other players and reach 10 infection counters before they die. There are strategies involving protective gear and a cure for all players to fight for. You still there?
Yes. Sorry.
I couldn't think of anything unimpressed to say. By the whole thing, yeah.
Couldn't think of anything witty to say.
No, that's fine. I thought we'd stop recording. Okay, I think that that says everything we need to know then. So let's move on. Survive 2020, the card game for a new era. So this is not the same Can You Survive 2020? This one's just Survive 2020. A card game that explores surviving 2020 and turns what has been a hard year into a connective, fun experience with friends or family. Goal of $17,500 Australian dollars, and they've currently got $3,000. It's a hilarious family strategy tabletop game to share with friends and family for years to come. I mean, I don't want to relive 2020.
No.
Why would I want to play in years to come? COVID-19 and the supermarket treasures. The game nobody asked for. I mean, you're not wrong. You've got a goal of $7,500 and you've got 12 backers and have raised $213. So, yep, that's great. You'll like this one, Ray. COVIDopoly, the board game that never ends.
Oh, dear.
A goal of $20,000, and they've got 7 backers and have made $127.
Fair enough.
I mean, it literally does look like they've taken a Monopoly board and just changed the things to be COVID-related.
I mean, there are enough Monopoly variations out there that are already. I don't think we need a COVID one as well. Yeah.
You're right there, right? Is all this talk of COVID making you cough?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, okay. I think we better move on then.
Yep, quickly. For my health and safety reasons.
Okay.
This is a COVID secure podcast.
It is indeed. So let's talk about what we've backed since the last episode on Kickstarter. I'll ask you first, Ray. What have you backed?
Nothing.
Okie dokie. So what have I backed? I have backed four things. And if I click on my back projects, I'll tell you what they are. First one is the Stargate SG-1 RPG. Because I've started to get into RPGs a bit more now, and I like Stargate SG-1, I thought I would back the Stargate SG-1 RPG. There's not much more to it than that. I backed at the lowest tier, $10, just to get a PDF version of the base rules. Won't know much more about that until I can read the rules and the core rule book and see what that's all about. But an RPG set in the Stargate franchise, so that should be fun.
Sounds fun.
You've watched Stargate, haven't you?
I watched it when it was on the TV, and I had TV before I went to uni. So I know that later in the series, two of the key actors from Farscape
they sure do
moved into Stargate, but I did not see. I think I watched like the first season and a bit, and then I would kind of watch random ones if I just spotted that it was on.
Yeah.
But it's one of those ones that I kind of feel like, oh, maybe I should go watch it. I don't know.
It's good to watch the whole thing all the way through. There's a few stinkers in the first season.
Yeah, and I think, what was it? I know, is it All Four or whatever Channel 4's online thing is called nowadays? They've got the entire back catalogue of Buffy, which is a bit tempting, which is you know, just a clarification of how bad 2020 has got.
I wonder if they're using the remastered widescreen versions. Did you read about the controversy over those?
No.
So what they've done is they've taken the original film and rescanned it, which is fine. Like they did with Star Trek: The Next Generation, where they rescanned all the original negatives. But what they didn't do is what Star Trek did is they didn't keep it in 4:3. Mm. The first couple of seasons that were shot in 4:3, they've scanned the film in and done it in 16:9. So you've got lots of random crew members and lights and things just at the side of the frame, because they were obviously filmed, but they were supposed to be cut out.
Yeah.
So yeah, they didn't do a very good job with that. I don't know if they've since fixed any of those, but I know on some of them, what they did is they zoomed them in. It's like, you should have just kept it at 4:3. But I guess there's this perception in the general public that if it's not widescreen, it's not HD, which is really annoying.
Yeah.
But oh well. Anyway, what's next? Ukiyo, a puzzle-based card game for 1 to 4 players. This was just £7, and it's a British company. That's why I back this. So it's a small puzzle card game. You can play it solo or with 2 to 4 players. And it's all, you've got like these little tiles that you've got to lay on top of each other to create like patterns of symbols and things like that. And I thought for a few pounds, it's a nice small game that you can carry around with you and take places. So I thought that was worth funding. And they had a lot of stretch goals that they unlocked, extra puzzles, better quality box, linen finish to the cards. So for a £7 game, they eventually raised over £5,000, which I thought was really good.
Yeah.
Next up is Dice Splice by Sea Griffin Games, who we've talked to not on the podcast, I think, but we interviewed them at UKGE because they are the people who made Pirates of Penryn.
Oh, okay.
So this is their next game, Dice Splice, which is a sort of like little dexterity game where you've got these little planks of different sizes and treasure dice, and you've got to like make little structures of the dice and the planks without everything falling apart. Difficult to explain. You're best off just watching the campaign video, but it looks like a lot of fun. And again, small independent British company, always good to support them. And Pirates of Penryn looked really nice and well made, so I've got no doubts that this will be as well. So that's from Matt and Kate at Sea Griffin Games, and they raised just shy of £10,000. So that was very good for them.
Mm-hmm.
And last up was a game that, as soon as I saw this, I had to back it. And it looks amazing. And I'm not the only person who thinks it looks amazing. Nearly 9,000 other people agreed with me. This campaign raised over $500,000 Canadian dollars. And that is Creature Comforts. And this is a very, very cute game. And basically, you're playing animals, sort of like anthropomorphic animals, like, and you know, I like that kind of thing from Dale of Merchants.
Yep.
But what you're doing is you're gathering things to try and make your winter at home the best it can be.
Oh, okay.
But it's not like stuff that you would expect. It's like cartoony, animalized versions of things that we would have if we were making a home. So like board games and microwave ovens, I guess. I mean, I don't know if microwaves are in there, but just stuff like that. And you're trying to gather all those resources to make your home as cozy as it can be for the winter. So, and the artwork is just so lovely. And it's got lots of little wooden markers and tokens and resources. You've got fruit, wood, stone, mushrooms, grain, yarn, stories, and coins. It comes in a lovely box with lots of game trays storage solutions, so you can store everything in the box. It just looks amazing. And it was 59 Canadian dollars, which is in pounds. I don't know what that is in pounds, actually, because it doesn't tell you on the website anymore. But I think it was about 35 quid or something. And for all the stuff that you get in the box with the game, I thought that was a bargain, really. And just looks awesome. I can't wait to give it a try.
Super duper. So not related to the Aardman animation, Creature Comforts then.
No. The MEB, the old MEB adverts.
Yeah.
Turn the heating up.
Yeah.
Give us some more money. So that's what I've been spending my cash on. But we've had some arrivals, and we've both had arrivals this month.
Yes.
Well, first of all, there's been something that we've both had, so why don't you talk about that?
Yes. So Kitten and Tinderblocks have arrived, which are the two little, I guess, dexterity-based games from Alley Cat.
I guess they are, yeah.
Kitten is a stacking game, and you stack different shapes of cats based on a card that you pull, and it has a design saying you need to stack this, and you've got to everybody has to stack at the same time. Well, like when the card is flipped over, and the person to make the stack stable first wins. Tinderblocks, you are pulling cards one at a time and adding logs and embers in whatever configuration the card says onto the campfire. And if you knock the campfire over, then you've lost. And they're both very fun and lovely little tins, and they've got really nice wooden components in.
Yeah, I tried them when I was recording the unboxing videos, and I was terrible, and my hand was just shaking so much. And I always used to have like a really steady hand, but it seems to have just left me completely. I was used, because in Tinderblocks you've got the tweezers, and I was finding it so difficult to pick them up and put them down without, like, as soon as I let go of the tweezers, them knocking, and yeah, it was really, really tough.
Yeah, I had a little play with Tinderblocks on my own. I found it quite peaceful.
Oh yeah,
just sitting there going, duh, duh, duh. Yeah, I'm just building a fire. That's perfectly normal. And I had a go at some of the kitten stack patterns, and a couple of them were a bit tough. Like a couple of, I think there's some Kickstarter exclusive cards in there, like five, which are like slightly more difficult stacks to make, where you've got to balance things exactly right, otherwise it just falls apart. I think it would be a bit more fun when you're actually playing it properly with other people. But I had a little go on my own just to see what it was like, and it's very fun.
Okay.
And I also, in that Kickstarter, backed to get the Simon's Cat game Nom.
Oh, that's what Nom is. I was looking at that thinking, a game about food that I haven't backed. What's going on?
No, it's the Simon's Cat game, which is it's basically an empty your hand kind of card game, but with Simon's Cat characters. It's the simplest way of describing it. Mm-hmm. So some of the characters do certain things, like you can play actions to make other people pick up more cards, or there's the little dog who will sort of disrupt things. And you've got to play like, depending on which instruction is currently on the table, higher or lower, you've got to play higher or lower than the card played before you until you get to a point where you can't do that. And then you better hope you've got a swap card to reverse it so you can go the other way. And yeah, basically you've got to empty your hand. And the, presumably the person with cards in their hand at the end is the loserest of all losers.
Okay, cool. So that's three Alley Cat games, but you've got another one, haven't you?
Yes, I have. I also got Tengaru Arrive, which is the sort of, I guess, is it a civ building type thing? It's got work placement. And it's based on like societies from like Polynesia and stuff like that. Let me just read an action. It's an engine building, resource management, Euro something. In the early seafaring days of the Pacific Islands, you will set out to spread your culture across the archipelago of Tengaru. Gather resources, enlist the help of your culture's leaders, and attract nomads to help your culture prosper. And I backed the deluxe edition, so I've got like the little wooden boats and the little wooden tokens and stuff. And little wooden fish and little wooden, yeah.
They look very nice.
Basically, little wooden things are very attractive. I like having...
I'm glad Alley Cat... Sorry. Yeah.
Sorry, I was just saying I like wooden token upgrades.
Mm. It's nice to see Alley Cat making bigger, nicer games, because obviously they did Dice Hospital. But a lot of the games they've done have just been smaller ones, and I like that they're starting to branch out and do a lot of these type of things as well now. Yeah. I think, you know, since we saw them, we've said this before, they've become a real, force in the UK board games industry, haven't they?
Yeah. This one does still rely quite heavily on dice. Like, you have to put your dice, you roll your dice and then you put them in your boat. And then you use your dice to kind of settle and attract nomads and all this sort of stuff and gather resources. So it's still a very dice-heavy game. So kind of similar to like a lot of their bigger games have just been dice-based, haven't they? Because there was Coral Islands, which is dice. Dice Hospital, dice.
I don't think there's many dice in Chocolate Factory, but having not played it yet, I'm not sure.
But yeah, they like their dice, do Alley Cat.
They sure do, and why not?
Very true. But yeah, that arrived, and I haven't got to play it yet, but I'm working on Chris. I've asked him, and you know, maybe we should do a gaming night. And he's like, oh yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
So... Hopefully.
Bring him over to the dark side. You can do it, Ray.
Well, I mean, I've still got the bloody Binding of Isaac game that we haven't played, and, you know, he is, you know, he played a lot of Binding of Isaac. So, the video game.
Yeah.
So, yeah, those... are the Alley Cat gaming arrivals pour moi.
And there's one other thing that's not an Alley Cat game.
Yeah.
Two things, I guess.
Well, two things. It was the the Kickstarter was for one of them, but there was a there was a pledge where you could get the previous one. So I backed the first one, which was Mintworks. And then there was Mint Delivery, which I didn't back. And then there's Mint Cooperative, which is the one that I backed. And I bought Mint Delivery to come with that. So they have now both arrived. And I don't know whether I'm being like super impatient, but I perceived this as taking for absolute ages. So I'm just going to go on my backed projects. I'm going to look at like when I actually backed it.
Yeah.
Because... Tell me where it was. Oh, loading. So, Mint Cooperative. Estimated delivery, April 2020. So, yeah. That finished over a year ago now. So, I think it finished in December 2020 when it was successful.
They might have got caught up in COVID stuff because I can't imagine that they weren't prepared given, you know, how well their Kickstarter's gone.
I think they probably were, and that's why I'm not, like, moaning. It just, it felt like a really long time, and I was like, when is that going to come? It hath arrived. It hath arrived, finally. I'm just going to go and tick it off. Tick that off. Because I haven't ticked anything off this year. That arrived. That hasn't arrived. That's fine. So we got loads of stuff. Well, I say loads of stuff. How many things have I got that are waiting? 1, 2, 3. That arrived. 4, 5, 6, 7. Got 7 Kickstarters that I'm waiting for.
Okay. We can talk about that. Was in our yearly review next month then.
Yeah. Well, one of them's estimated delivery of like October 2022. So I'll probably have forgotten that I backed it by that point. Honestly, I am very forgetful when it comes to Kickstarter sometimes.
Yeah, ditto.
Yeah.
Okay. What have I had then? Very exciting. Dale of Merchants 3 has arrived.
Huzzah.
With 4 lovely playmats and lots of card sleeves and a nice carrying bag to put the playmats into. So as expected, I've already taken Dale of Merchants 3 and put the cards in Dale of Merchants collection. So I've got everything in one nice big box. So all I need to do now is sit down and spend a couple of hours literally sleeving every single card in the game. So that's going to be fun.
That'll be a fun Christmas activity.
And they are, yes, it will. They are very nice sleeves, though. They've got the Dale of Merchants back on the back of them, so they're not just generic sleeves. They're you know, proper ones for the game. So yes, as expected, when you watch my unboxing video for that, you will see how very, very excited I was.
Yeah. Jolly good.
Yes. Something I forgot to put on my list that I've just realised that arrived was from the board game Tables People, and that's the big playmat that I purchased from them.
Ah, yes.
And it's a nice big blue playmat, and it literally is the same size as our dining room table. So it fits perfectly on there, so that makes that a nice, lovely surface for gaming on. So
for when lockdown finally ends.
Exactly, and we can have people around. And it's got a nice no-slip rubber back, and it's got lovely stitching around the edges, and... Yes, it was very, very, very nice, and I'm looking forward to using that. And I might use that now as the backdrop for unboxing videos because it's quite a pleasant blue. And blue's our colour. Our logo's in blue, so it goes quite well. I was thinking about getting a custom mat with our logo on, but actually this would probably be fine. What else has arrived? Fallen Angels from Sideroom Games. This was a very quick turnaround. This only backed. When did this finish? Where does it say on the campaign page when it finished? Funded in April 2020.
Yeah.
So it was only a few months. But it's just a little card game. This is the one that has all the pictures of the real like gangsters and criminals from 1920s Australia on the cards, which I think is really cool. And there's actually a little booklet that comes with them that gives you information about them all and what sort of gangs they were involved in and all that, you know, what nefarious activities they got up to. So I thought that was quite cool. And that was only a cheap, small, little sort of deduction card game. So looking forward to that. Holy Festival of Colours from Floodgate Games. This looks really nice. So this is the game based on the Indian. Is it the Indian Hindu festival? Is it?
Yeah.
Isn't it? So this is the game based on the Hindu festival, Holi. I'm assuming it's pronounced Holi. Was it Holi?
I don't know.
Let me watch the video. Hang on a second. I'm sure they'll tell me. There's no voiceover in the video. It's just text. So I'm going to assume it's Holi unless someone tells me otherwise. This is the game where you're throwing colour around, but it's got a board that's three-dimensional. So it's three layers, and you're basically throwing colours up, and they look, sort of like have to dribble down to the layers below, which I think is really cool. And yeah, the components are all really nice. Got lots of nice little wooden colour tokens, and the levels of the playing area are nice, high quality plastic, and you've got these four cardboard corners that hold it all together, and it's just all look really nice. And yeah, can't wait to try this. I think this is going to be a lot of fun. Thing I liked about all the little colour tokens as well is they've got like that paint splatter sort of effect on them.
Yeah.
But they're not all the same. So you get two blue ones and they've got different paint splatter. So it's as if they've gotten a big sheet of a wood, painted it blue or red or whatever, and then done the paint splatter on there and then cut them all out, as opposed to just printing the same thing on every single one. So yeah, it gives each one a nice unique look, which I think is really nice. So yeah, looking forward to that. In fact, it even says on the Kickstarter page, each colour token is unique. So yeah, there you
awesome.
Go. And last of all, again, that arrived a few days ago, is Tapiru, a bubble tea game. So this again is another quick turnaround. This one only funded in June. And this one was from Japan as well. And yeah, this is the game where you're building like bottles of bubble tea and putting tapioca in them, because that's apparently all the rage in Japan at the moment. I still haven't tried bubble tea. I need to, once lockdown is over and we can go into Birmingham, and there's a few bubble tea places in town, isn't there?
Yeah, I've had bubble tea, but I haven't had it with tapioca. I've had it with like the jelly balls in the bottom.
It all smells. It all sounds lovely.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to giving this a go. It's lots of nice little cardboard tiles where you build up your bottle. Is it a bottle? No, cup. It's one of those plastic cups with a lid on, isn't it? So
yeah.
You build up your cup of bubble tea and try to get the most scrumptious one you can. So yes, I'm looking forward to trying that. So that is everything I've had arrive, and videos of those things will be on our Kickstarter channel very soon. You need to record videos for the things you've got as well.
Yes.
And send them over to me so I can.
I mean, I've already opened most. I've already opened.
Fine.
Well, we can't do all the clever like spinning of the things and the.
Oh, that's true. Because they need to be here, don't they? Yeah. That's why I still haven't edited the. What was the last one we did before lockdown? Suro. Phoenix Rising. I've still got the raw footage for that because I haven't got the box, so I can't do all the fancy stuff. So,
I know.
Oh well.
Oh well.
So let's move on to our ones to watch. So Ray, what's your first one to watch this month?
My first one to watch is called Momiji, I think. that's how it's spelled. Whether I'm pronouncing it correctly or not, I have no idea. Which is a poetic card game about autumn colours and stunning landscapes in ancient Japan. Play solo or up to four players. And the idea is you are attempting to fulfil objectives by collecting the most valuable autumn leaves of the Imperial Garden, making the most of their landscape abilities. So you collect leaves. You have some landscape tile card things down the bottom. And you get acorns, which are kind of like your currency, and then you use the acorns to activate objectives. And then, you know, move towards the objectives to try and get points. And it's a nature game about sort of, you know, vista building, set collection, resource collection, buying and doing bits and pieces, about nature and in autumn, which is one of my preferred seasons. And in the expansion called The Ancient Garden, there are four wooden animal tokens, which include a fox, a deer, a frog, and a cat. And basically, it's all about those wooden animal tokens for me.
They've unlocked a squirrel as well.
Oh, they've unlocked a squirrel as well. There you go, then. I mean, and it's relatively, like, it's not super expensive. It's 15 euros for the base game or 25 for the deluxe game, which comes with the expansion and some extra deluxe bits and pieces. So that's, I mean, that's 23-ish pounds.
Yeah, it does look very nice. I mean,
who only knows what on earth it will cost to ship something from Europe to the UK after the 1st of January 2021. But, you know, it looks very pretty. And, you know, that's why I think it is a good one to watch. It has already funded, so in that respect, possibly not one to watch. But it's funded, I think, over 300%. They initially wanted 10,000 euros, and they're up 33,270. And they've still got 9 days to go. So if it tickles your fancy, you've got until 7 p.m. on the 23rd of December to back it for some autumnal fun. And I'm not sure. Let me have a check. Ah, yes. Estimated delivery is September 2021, so it will arrive in time for autumn next year. So perfect timing, in theory. Yeah, providing nothing else absolutely bizarre, insane, terrible happens between now and then.
Right, so my first one this month is, again, this is very well funded, so I don't think the fact that yours is well funded should exclude it from being a one to watch. This is called Aqua Garden. Become the owner of an aquarium for 1 to 4 players. So if you like the little animal tokens in that, Ray, you should look at the little fish tokens in this, because they look very, very, very nice.
Yes, I did spot this, and I was debating whether to put it as a one to watch for myself as well.
So you get clownfish, striped fish, turtles, sharks, seahorses, coral.
Oh, I know.
Oh, it's just so nice. So this is from... who is it from? What's the name of the company?
I don't know.
They're not on the... Oh, there it is. Uchibakoya, Japanese board game publisher. It's the first one they've had on Kickstarter. And their goal was 1.5 million yen. And they've got 27.5 million yen. So that is apparently 11,000 pound goal, and they've got nearly £200,000 now, and it's all about making the best aquarium and buying fish for your collection. Now, if this does sound like your cup of tea, you may not be able to back this by the time I've edited this episode, because there's only 29 hours left. So it depends how quickly I can get this done. So it ends on Monday. No, it ends at 1 a.m. on Tuesday, the 15th of December. So unless I can get this episode out by tomorrow night, which I highly doubt because I'm at work tomorrow. So although I put this as a one to watch, I apologize for all those people who look at this and go, oh, this looks very nice. But you never know. Just knowing about it, maybe it'll come out retail, because it certainly looks the part.
Yeah, you've got about £13 shipping on top of the...
That's the only thing. In fact, there was another game that I was contemplating backing that I was looking at this week, and it was like the game was like 40 quid and the shipping was 30. And I was like, there's no way I'm backing that. That's just crazy.
Yeah.
Why would it cost that much?
13 is probably still pretty good to come all the way from Japan.
What exactly?
All things considered. But, oh, the little seahorses.
Oh, no, they're so nice, aren't they?
I know. Even the seaweed is cute.
So that's Aqua Garden from Uchibakoya.
There you go. Right, my second one is... it's a digital game, actually. It is that you can download and play a little demo on Steam, which I have done. And it's called Hell Architect. So this is a kind of, I think they're like colony builders. So you are playing as a new architect of hell, and you are managing hell, or your own version. And you get sinners who come down at certain timed intervals, and you use them to dig, to collect resources, build torture devices, but you also have to build... This is a very gentle hell, I think. well, I say that. You feed them, you provide them with beds or a cardboard box, and you actually provide them with a toilet. And I thought, well, if this is really hell, surely you should just, you know, let them poop themselves. But I suppose it makes sense later, because you build the toilet and you actually collect the excrement, and then you use that to put into the water squeezer to make water for your sinners to drink. So possibly more torturous than my mind came up with. It's kind of like you have to make sure that everybody's needs are met, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Then you have to collect. So suffering is your primary currency of trade. And you do that by putting your sinners into torture devices. And if you put certain sinners in, you might get a bonus, or you might get actually negative suffering because they're either too high leveled for that device or too under leveled for that device. And then it's just, you know, it's just not fun. So there's not enough suffering. I had a little play with it on the demo. It's just like a tutorial. I got a bit confused at a couple of things. Like there were two that had gone, I'd sent down to start digging in one area. And there was a toilet, and they were just stood there going, "I need the toilet, I need the toilet." And I'm like, "Go to the toilet then." And I couldn't figure out why they wouldn't just go. So I built them a new toilet down where they were. And then like 10 minutes later realized, oh, it's because like this ledge here is one square too high for them to climb up. So I need to build a ladder.
Ah, right. Okay.
And as soon as I built the ladder, everybody was able to go up and down between the two different like areas that I'd managed. And it was quite fun. I wish there was a fast forward button, but I suspect there will be in the main game, because obviously it's just a demo. It has fully funded on Kickstarter already, but it's also got 14 days to go. So you've got until 4 o'clock in the afternoon on the 28th of December if you fancy backing on Kickstarter. I'm pretty sure you'd probably also be able to do some sort of green light early access thing on Steam, to be fair. And if
some of the pledge levels include early accesses, so
yeah. So if you what's the word? If you put it on your Steam wish list, then you get lots of extra info and deets being sent your way.
I like all the animated GIFs on the campaign page. It looks really cool. Yeah.
So they haven't reached all their stretch goals. I mean, one of their stretch goals is if they get to 50,000 Canadian dollars, then they'll release it on the Switch as well. But they are currently only at 18,000 Canadian. So there's two other circles of hell, stretch goals to get through before you get there, which includes new demons and artifacts in hell architects, so some talismans. And then after that, it's you know, you can also get an art book.
Oh, lovely.
And you can get some you can buy some of the game keys for their previous games. And the company is called Playway. There you go.
Just looking at the pledge levels, and it's not that expensive. It's like £8 is the cheapest pledge level that includes a copy of the game, so that's pretty good.
Yeah. So yeah. It's not just the game, it's like a game key, some avatar, some early bird stuff, you get to go in the credits.
Mm-hmm.
The wallpaper for phone and desktop. Some acknowledgements and all sorts of lovely stuff. I mean, junior hell manager. That sounds like a great job title. Ooh, you get a Discord title as well. Lovely.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. So if you fancy it, I think it's worth having a quick download and a quick play of the demo. It's like, I think it's like 60 megabytes or something like that. It's not big. It would be very quick. And there you go. Hell Architect.
That looks fun. Okay. My last one to watch is a solo game from Scott Alms of Tiny Epic fame. But it's not been published by Gammonin. It's one of the Button Shy games. And this is the Ugly Griffin Inn. So the description says you own the questionably prestigious Ugly Griffin Inn, which is the only inn within 100 miles. Your patrons are rowdy and rude, but they are the only ones around. Your goal is to fill your inn with enough patrons to keep the debt collectors at bay, but to do so you must manage some painfully peculiar patrons. So it's all about getting all these patrons into your inn. They have preferences for food and drink. They have quirks, like they like to start fights or make loud noises or emit strong odours. And from looking at it, you have to place the patrons inside the inn. But there are certain conditions on the cards that you have to meet. So, for example, a certain character is highlighted. If there is noise directly above or below the room that this character is in, then this character sleepwalks out of the inn and casts a spell. So various things will happen based on where you place the patrons inside the inn. So, I mean, it's $3 for the print and play, $10 for a physical copy of the game, or $12 for the game with an expansion. I mean, Button Shy Games, they've done a few. You've had some of their games in the past, haven't you?
Yeah, I have done, yeah.
Good communication, fast and reasonable delivery, and good pricing. So, yeah, if you're after a nice little solo game and you like the sort of fantasy theme for putting adventurers and people in an inn, then this might be up your street. So this has got nearly 2,000 backers. They've raised $44,000 of a $2,000 goal. So again, well funded. And the campaign ends on Saturday, December the 19th. So that's the Ugly Griffin Inn.
Lovely jubbly.
And that is everything we have to talk about in this episode, right?
Indeed it is.
So people can find us on social media, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. We are TogCast on those platforms. That's TogCast.
You can also listen to us at soundcloud.com/offlinegamer or by subscribing in your favourite podcast app.
You can watch all of our unboxing videos and things like that at youtube.com/theofflinegamer.
And you can check out all of our contact and get in touch via our website, which is www.offlinegamer.co.uk.
And if you'd like to support what we do and throw a little bit of cash our way, just to say well done and keep it up, then you can go to our Ko-fi page or Ko-fi page, which is ko-fi.com/Todcast. And that'll go towards the cost of web hosting and things like that to keep the podcast going. Yep. So that's 2020 more or less done with, Ray.
Pretty much, yeah.
Let's hope 2021 is better.
Yes. I'm pretty sure everybody has said that every year since about 2016. And 2016 was the year where a lot of famous people died. And everyone was like, oh, I'm so done with 2016 and how everything will be better. And then so far, like every year since then, has just got worse.
Yeah, all the people who said it at the end of 2019, everything that happened this year is all their fault.
Yeah.
But 2021 will be better.
Hopefully, yes.
Okay. So we'll see you all next year. Have a wonderful Christmas and a Happy New Year to everyone.
Happy Christmas, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.